This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated.
This is Games at Work, episode 53, Mad Women and Mooks, and was recorded on Friday, the 12th of July, 2013.
Hi, everybody. This is another episode of GamesAtWork.biz. I am Phaedra Boynodiris, hailing in from North Carolina, and I'm joined here by my erstwhile colleague, Michael Martin from Budapest, Hungary.
Erstwhile, I'm still your colleague, and I'm still from North Carolina, but like you said, I'm in Budapest right now, but I will be back in North Carolina probably before you know it.
You know, you're missing that Hungarian accent. You could at least fake it a little. What's a good Hungarian accent?
I could, but you know, it's not like, you know, the Russian accent, you know, or the French accent. It's not anything like the German accent. It's, you know, Hungarian accent is, I don't know. It's hard to actually do. I've not tried to really do a Hungarian accent.
Have another sip of beer.
Maybe that would probably help. But I could speak a little Hungarian to you if you like. I could say Jonapot Kivanok, you know, which would be a, you know, nice good day to everyone.
So. What did you call my mother?
No, she's fine. Hey, we're missing Michael Rowe today. He's unfortunately detained by other work instead of games, or maybe he is playing a game at work. Who knows? But we have a super awesome show for you, our listener, today. So let's launch right in. So the first one is an article from TechCrunch about a company called Super Awesome. It's a UK discovery platform for children that is helping to launch mobile content for kids to be able to move away from in-app purchases, which seems to be pretty controversial. I'm reaching these kids and reaching this demographic is an important advertising opportunity because you can create impressions, you can create brand awareness, and you can create purchasing behavior because if a kid has a smartphone, more than likely they have an allowance and more than likely they have an opportunity to influence the purchasers in their family. You and I, Phaedra, probably don't know anything about children having influences on their parents asking them to buy things, do we?
No, not at all. We know nothing.
Nothing about that. So so it'll be very interesting to see how this goes forward because what I've tended to do, and I don't know if you've done this too, I tend to actually turn off in-app purchases at the operating system level and say, just don't do that. And then that way the kids can play, but they're not tempted or by accident, you know, decide that they're going to, you know, buy the extra level or the power up to double their freemium cash thing. And then I wind up getting a bill for it. Do you have a strategy that works for you?
That is exactly my strategy as well. But I've got to say, there's many games that are now getting sneakier and sneakier in the way that they approach free to play. I don't know. Sometimes it does really feel predatory to me. So I think this is good news, although it does make me wonder about the nature of the advertising. Because I remember back in the day when I ran the website womengamers.com, you know, we were targeting women who play computer and console games. Mm-hmm. And when we went out for advertising money, when we looked for advertisers, we had all kinds of advertisers who, you know, as soon as we heard we had a women's site, wanted to show ads that were completely inappropriate for our audience. So completely inappropriate.
I mean, don't use brand names, but maybe the areas, perhaps, or what's an example?
Oh, you know, things like. So our audience really into technology, really into games, yes. You know, predominantly women, very, very highly educated.
High disposable income, I would think, too.
Yeah, and just some of the – and what they wanted to do was they wanted to show ads showing half-naked women. And it was just like, really? Like, really? Did you study our demographic? Did you look through our website?
That's pretty and silly.
Yeah, it was really silly. Or things that were just not appropriate. Anyway, it just makes me wonder, you know, if you're trying to target kids, how do you go about it in a way that is sensible? You know, they're here. There's been a big debate about Coca-Cola and vending machines within public school systems.
Yes.
So it just makes me wonder, like, okay, how is this all going to play out?
Well, you know, there's so many examples of advertising that just feels like it's inappropriate. You know, so for example, when you go to the movie theater and you're going to watch a movie that might be, you know, PG-13 rated, and it might be a happy, fun movie or a drama or something like that. And then the previews that they show immediately before the movie are like all these horror flicks, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, come on, really? You know, do you think you're going to reach the same audience? You know, and many of those previews are kind of ones where I actually do hold my hand over my kids' eyes because they don't freaking need to see that kind of stuff.
I know what you mean. I do know what you mean.
Yeah. So interesting that came out that way. You know, speaking of advertising, I posted this on Google Plus a little bit earlier today. Coca-Cola here in Hungary has got a fantastic advertising campaign going on right now where they have names of people on the labels of the Coca-Cola bottles. I'll put a copy of that into the show notes. So the one that they had for me, and I will say it here for my listeners, so you might actually want to take a look at it. The Hungarian word is heartbreaker, but I don't think it really applies to me. I just happened to pick it out of the case. But they have ones for, you know, Sophia and for Esther and Zuzi and you know, Tamás and Zoltán and all these different, you know, good Hungarian names that you, if you pick one out of a vending machine or just out of the case, you're picking a name and potentially a friend's name or maybe even your own name. So it's really cool.
That is indifferent. That is interesting.
Do they have that in the U.S. right now?
Not that I've seen.
Wow. It's really nice because it builds on friendship. You know, like there's their posters up on the billboards up that has like, you know, three Coca-Cola bottles like toasting one another, and it'll be three different, you know, very traditional Hungarian names, and it kind of builds that, you know, friendship, and you know, everybody knows somebody named, you know, Zoltán or Szabolcs or Norbert or something like that, and it's just very cool. I love it.
Very cool. That is clever.
Yeah, I think so too. So moving along in our show, and I just love the name Super Awesome, by the way. We have another interesting link also from TechCrunch about the Blackboard team. So these guys that have used social media and mechanisms to bring people together in support of the digital delivery of education and for exchanging work product and the like, they believe that from the speech that was given at the Startup Festival in Montreal, that there's a startup well, there's lots of startups, but they're talking about massively open online courses and that they represent an incredible pressure on traditional means of education to lower the price point. And you, in the pre-show, said that you had a few examples of some MOOCs that you – or sorry, not MOOCs, MOOCs. I'm sorry. I'm used to using that. So MOOCs that you've kind of been thinking about here too.
Yeah, I've done some research on MOOCs, and there actually is quite a lot of controversy around MOOCs. First of all, it's open, and most of the time it's free, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So it's also massively available. And the idea of the way that these MOOCs work is typically there's a whole bunch of reading content. There'll be some assessments, there'll be some testing, but there's also communities such that you can discuss amongst others what has been learned. There might be some level of interactivity, serious games, or virtual worlds associated with it, depending on the nature of the content and what is it that they're trying to teach. But in essence, the potential downside is that they're not cheap. I mean, like I said, mainly free, but to get it to be set up and to be sustainable, there's a question about that. And some of the instructors, some faculty members have also been criticizing MOOCs because they say, gee, there's no direct faculty-student interaction. It is being devalued. It's a very mass market approach. But again, there's if you look at the history of Khan Academy and the kind of results that Khan Academy has gotten, I think there certainly is a place for MOOCs. It may not be the panacea for all for teaching from here on out, but there are some things that I think make a lot of sense to leverage MOOCs for.
Well, I mean, the key at the end of the game here is certification. We talked a little bit about this last week, and we missed you for that show. But the idea of certification being a level of trust that you have skill or capability that is now independently verified by a third party, a MOOC that maybe is run by MIT or maybe by Stanford or a range of other ones that are out there, that's really where I think the next level of value is. And if it's run in an open, free fashion, then the question begins is like, okay, well, what level of certification or degree granting can you get by taking courses through these MOOCs?
Right. And you got to think with this approach, you can reach more students. I mean, truly, it reduces the barriers to access. This level of education. So I think that too is important to relay and convey. And what from the content I've been reading, they're really putting forward the idea of establishing partnerships, institutions, organizations partnering with each other in order to make this a sustainable model.
And I think there are ways of scaling them appropriately too. The whole educator interaction with the student, I believe, is very important and needs to happen. My oldest son, he's just now 13, is actually taking online courses here over the summer with Johns Hopkins. And he's doing very advanced math for his age. And he's getting a degree of interaction from his instructor as he's going through the test-taking process, but doing an awful lot of self-paced and online education that's based on video, that's based, a lot of Khan Academy kinds of things that are built into the structure of this Johns Hopkins set of courses already. So I think there's a scalability element there that educators and instructors and professors can use the technology, can use environments like Blackboard and others to reach a larger audience. But of course, there's going to be limitations to how many people that they can touch and the degree of quality that they can have for those interactions as well. I get that and I understand it.
Agreed. This is certainly a space to watch. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we're going to see a lot more developments here.
Absolutely.
It'll just be a question of scalability, right? How do you scale this out?
Right. So I wonder, how do you make the productivity of the instructing staff better? Because ideally you want to have that personal relationship between the student and the instructor. You want to have the relationships between students, and many courses have to be a collaborative experience, right? Just like in the working world. So how do you scale that faster and say, well, a direct class, a teacher might have in a university program, 100 or 200 students in their program, but then you go into recitation, you'd have a TA or a graduate student handling about 30. Maybe there are models like that where you have, enormous classes of 1,000 and you have TAs that break that up into groups of 30 or 40 and work it that way too.
Well, another thought that I had, so I'm becoming more familiar with the Office of Science, Technology, and Planning, which is a U.S. government agency that establishes regulations, IT regulations. And I was just wondering, maybe like thinking about the Department of Education and now this big push towards the Common Core, what if there was some policy that said when you're creating curriculum that is going to be taught in the public school system, all curriculum has to have the following criteria. And in essence, the criteria is going to make them easily accessible and integrated into a MOOC environment.
Oh, I see. I see. So by having a standard set of deliverables.
Yeah, that's right. A regulatory body mm-hmm. that says, here's the specifications for all courseware so that they can be anything can be plugged directly into a MOOC. So in essence, you know, I could see what my kid is going to be learning in fourth grade. I could go and look at all the curriculum online and all the courseware would be available via a MOOC.
You know, that's really, really interesting. You know, I'm envisioning almost, you know, like a Quake platform, you know, that says everything should fit into this mode. And you know, and as such, you know, here are your modules. Here's the way the tests should be administered. Here's how the grading can happen. And by standardizing, you're now just having to create content that will fit into that framework.
Well, the content already exists as a for the core, the common core. So, you know, there's the worksheets and the publications and things like that. But if there was some regulation that said, okay, it's got to be in this digital format with these APIs so that if you had it, so that you could have it, in essence, this massive MOOC environment and people can go online and study exactly what's being taught in Physics 101 in the state of Texas. You know what I mean?
Well, see, and then I think the next elements would be that you want the content to be searchable, discoverable.
Right.
And exactly. Have the right collaborative solution around it so that if you and I are both doing Physics 101 and I'm here in Hungary, you're there in North Carolina, you know, we might have the opportunity to collaborate because we're working on the same problem together at the same time.
And then also imagine if you had that kind of open data mm-hmm. environment, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The opportunity for entrepreneurship is tremendous because I could go in and say, you know what, I'm going to build a mobile app for anybody who's taking that Physics 101 game, and if they want, or the course, and if they want to learn more or apply it, or you know what I mean? Like you could do add-ons and have that also be part of the environment. So you could have in-purchase items potentially, you know, for further training. I mean, there's so much more you could do here.
You know, there's some elements to what you're saying, and I've heard other people talk about it in this way, that if you look at Apple's iBook strategy, many of the things that Apple has tried to make easily available into iBooks for digital delivery of integrated content, video, audio, interaction, you know, you're not reading a textbook anymore. You've got an environment and a platform that you can have all of these elements put together. And I've actually taken a crack at this. I've developed an iBook myself, and it is absolutely fascinating the kinds of things that you can do with this now.
Very cool. Very cool.
Oh, I love it. Well, listen, I know this is a short show for both of us today, but I have one thing that I wanted to share with you and with our audience. We obviously are looking for your ideas, your thoughts, your things that you'd like to see us talk more about and explore with one another. You can visit us on our website. You can find us on Twitter at games@work_biz. You can find Phaedra at Innovate8, the number 8 game. Michael at MichaelRowe01. Myself at Carolina Big Blue. We are on Google+. We are on Tumblr. We are on Facebook. You cannot cross the internet without tripping over us.
We are everywhere.
And I just pinged Phaedra our about page from our website. And the thing I had to share with you there is the picture that I put up there today. You should know that I challenged my children to come up with some Lego minifigs for us as co-hosts. And I've got a couple others of these that I'll you know, we'll seed maybe other places in the site and elsewhere. And they call you Wonder Phaedra.
And they with my lasso.
Oh, you just wait. I'll show you. Lucy, my littlest, has actually built for you a Wonder Phaedra sort of catapult vehicle of sorts that you pilot yourself around to. I don't know if you fight crime or just fight her brothers or what, but it's pretty fun.
wait a minute. I have a vehicle where I can catapult myself into fights.
Something like that. You know, it's pretty incredible. You know, my kids are building all kinds of wonder Phaedra accoutrement and technology and capability. So
I like this.
The picture this I have is there good. Is sort of that's our standard personas, and then we have a further superhero set of personas that the kids have built and put together, and Wonder Phaedra is like the leader of the bunch.
Sweet. Yeah, look at that. I like my little outfit too. That's very cool.
Yeah, and you've got like a computer there with a wireless, you know, antenna and you know, a blue flashy thing too. So you're pretty slick.
Thank Lucy for me. I appreciate that. Wonder Phaedra, that's awesome. I need one of those for my desk.
There you go. We did not bring it up here, but the one thing I was going to mention from last week was something called Goldieblocks, and I did tease it for last week. And what Goldieblocks is, a Kickstarter by a woman for her children. She turned out to be an engineer and went to Stanford, I think it was, as well, for her engineering degree program. And she was just really sad that when she was growing up, her parents never bought her Lego and they never bought her, you know, engineering games and such. So she made it her mission. She spent her life savings. She did all these things. And I'm going to get the link for it, G-O-L-D-I, goldieblocks.com. I'd almost forgotten about this, but this is an important thing for us to cover here at the end of our show. There we go. So you can see it too, Phaedra. So it's a story. It's a book. It is a construction tool, and it also has elements of movement around it. So it's something that girls can play with. They can play with their parents, and they can explore some engineering concepts through play, which fits so well with this show. I just couldn't even believe it. So
I'll check this out. I'll show this to my daughter.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know once you show her the video around it, what she thinks about it. I'm going to do the same for my daughter and see what her thoughts are as well.
Oh, thanks for letting me know. This is good.
No, I think it's really, really quite clever. All right. Well, Michael, we missed you. Audience members, continue to feed us, you know, tags and ideas and your feedback, and we'd love to hear more from you. And we will be back with you in a week's time with another terrific, super awesome episode of Games at Work.biz.
Indeed. Ciao, everybody.
See ya.
You've been listening to Games at Work.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.